Live from the HananiahAutos.com studio, this is Jaguars Thursday.
Jaguars Thursday.
JP Shadrick, Jeff Loggeman, and Tony Baselli bring you the latest Jaguars news and what's happening around the NFL. Jaguars Thursday is brought to you by Baptist Health, Ticket Exchange, and by Everbank.
Touchdown, Jacksonville!
Jaguars Thursday, driven with SunPass, begins right now.
No JP Shadrick, I mean Wally Pipp. Yeah, you recognize this voice, that's right. I'm back, Pete Prisco. And Jeff Loggeman, and we're going to be joined by Tony Baselli from London.
What time, we don't know yet. He's at like an important dinner over there.
I don't know. We ought to call Dr. DPSCCO and find out if he's allowed to eat anything while he's over there, right? Is he allowed to eat?
Wait a minute. Is this the first time I've ever done a radio show with you?
It might be.
And you're driving the bus.
Yeah, I'm a bus driver. It's a long-time bus driver.
I like it. Did you move the seat up
a little bit? 7 years I drove that bus. Mike Freeman drove my ratings into the ground for about 6 months, and then it was just me. But, yeah, we got a lot to get into.
So you and Mike are still sending postcards to each other.
Oh, yeah,
huh?
we kid each other on Twitter. It's an everyday thing. He is so misguided, it's unbelievable.
He is a little misguided now.
By the way, the other day, I have a long-running joke, and you'll appreciate this, because you used to tell me some things back in the day, but I have a long-running joke.
Whoa, don't say that. Coughlin's back. Well, I didn't tell you anything.
Well, the reason I'm saying this is because the other day I said something to Seth Payne. I always joke with him that he was my deep throat, just like I do with Baselli, and he gets all mad.
Yeah.
And Seth says, if you say one more thing about me like that, I'm going to put you in a box and send you somewhere or something like that. By the way,
Seth is doing really good.
Yes, he's doing great
he's
radio.
He's big in Houston.
Yeah, he's a big – he's a morning
really
show.
Good.
He's big like Jeff Loggeman in Jacksonville.
No, Seth is he's like on like every day.
Yeah, he does morning radio, morning drive.
Yeah, he does a good job.
So, look, okay, we're 2 weeks away from training camp. Can you believe that?
This is the calm before the storm.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
But there's some news that's out there. And did you see the Forbes rankings, by the way?
Yeah.
Did you see where the Jaguars were at?
Yeah.
$1.95 billion.
It's a pretty good investment.
Franchise value. And Shad bought the team for $760 million.
That's a pretty darn good return on your
pretty
investment.
Pretty good now. And I think it was one of the largest increases across the list in Forbes. I want to say it was 30%. Is that right, Joe? Ballpark, 30% increase from the previous year. Ranked 42nd overall.
Now, why do you think that is? Because of the London thing and the improvements of the stadium and dailies,
yes,
and across
the
street?
Which all of those lead to one thing, and that's the owner, Shad Khan. And Mark Lamping is president, and some of the bold, you know, to use their term, bold decisions that they've made. But, I mean, you know, kudos to them because, and no offense to Wayne Weaver, but this organization, this franchise, would not be where it is now without the transition that it has gone through over the last number of years.
I would agree with you 100%. It could be somewhere else, by the way.
You know, because think about it. Would Wayne Weaver, maybe would have, but would he ever have really looked at this franchise from a global perspective? No way.
No.
No. He wouldn't have done it.
No. And he probably wouldn't have developed the shipyards like he's going to do. He probably wouldn't have put an indoor facility in there, which Tom griped about for years, and he never got that thing put in there. And finally, you get one done. So to answer your question, Jeff, absolutely not. But you know what the scary thing is, though? If you're a fan of the Jacksonville Jaguars, your team has stunk, okay? Mm-hmm. You have been a bad football team, and the value has gone up by that much.
I know.
There's no – everybody says, oh, the ultimate goal is to win.
The number one rated ranked franchise as far as value goes – it's not the New England Patriots. It's the Dallas
Cowboys. Right.
You know, like $4.2 billion or something like that. And the New England Patriots, I think, are like fourth, you know, but they've won more Super Bowls than anybody lately, but their franchise value is not there. You know, so, I mean, hey, it's great, you know. And, you know, I'm anxious to see what winning will do to impact that ranking on Forbes' list. And hopefully we can see that.
Where was Seattle on that list? I got to go back and look at it. I don't remember where they were.
You know, I didn't.
Because that's kind of – I always –
I'll have to pull it up.
I always liken it to Seattle. You know why? Jeff, you remember this. Seattle was kind of like a dormant franchise for a long time. And their 12th man fans and all that stuff. Who, and everybody, you know, they're Richard Sherman and this and that. But then they started winning. And it became winning.
I got your answer. Seattle came in at the 29th ranked professional sports franchise at – get this – Jaguars were at $1.95 billion. Seattle, $2.25 billion. So not far away. I mean, 29th to 42nd, that's not that far away
but,
at all.
But you know, 10 years ago, you would have never said that about Seattle either.
No.
But now, that's why I always compare, and I don't compare Jacksonville to Seattle in terms of football because Gus Bradley was there and he supposedly brought the Seattle way here, but because the markets. I mean, Seattle's bigger, obviously, but dormant franchise for a long time. People don't pay attention to it. Then you won, and now people pay attention to it. I get this all the time with my guys at work. I say, hey, I'm going to go over and do something on somebody on the Jaguars. They go, eh, doesn't really move the needle.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't move the needle. But if you win...
Nothing moved in Seattle until they started winning the Super Bowl.
No, you get Richard Sherman. Well, if Jalen Ramsey can become the Richard Sherman of the East Coast and become that guy...
Well,
that,
you've got to win a Super Bowl to do that.
Right, but you can also have the personality, and I think he can play to that personality.
You know, the other thing, too, it's kind of hard to compare Seattle, the market of Seattle, to Jacksonville. But, I mean, you can compare them as far as, you know, the popularity and success
right.
or the lack of success that Seattle had. But, you know, not very far away from Seattle is one of the biggest Canadian markets that obviously gets some flow into Seattle as well, and that's Vancouver,
right.
which is a huge city. You know, what is it, like a 20-minute plane ride across the border? So, I mean, they can draw from Vancouver as well.
Yeah, it's different, but it just reminds you. I just see everybody always goes, oh, Jacksonville, they don't move the needle. There's no interest there. But if you win, I don't care where you are. If you're a consistent winner.
Winners move the needle.
Of course they do.
Yeah, winners move the needle.
And this team can get to that. They're building to something like that. I don't think they're there yet or close to that yet, but they're building to something.
They are. They are. And by the way, speaking of numbers, I love the fact that the Green Bay Packers are publicly owned because then you get to see the numbers. Did you see them?
It makes some money.
God. The NFL, did you see what they shared league-wide? They had a pool of $7.8 billion that was split amongst the 32 teams. And that's obviously television revenue, national advertising, merchandising, et cetera. But that came out to be $244 million per team.
And then there was the $55 million relocation fee.
Which is not in that number.
No, but this team got that.
Yeah, but you
got
to remember, too, what $55 million relocation fee. I don't know exactly when they get that. And that's split 32 different ways.
Right.
You know, and you've got two different franchises. I don't know when that actually hits the books. And,
but that's still,
do the players share in that?
Yes.
Do they do?
That's part of it.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, look, now we're starting to hear, and you remember this from being around back in the day, the union and everything. Guaranteed contract talk. Richard Sherman came out. Did you see what he said?
I saw it.
There's no way that the players can strike, okay? They can talk all they want about the strike. You only have so many earning years in your body.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like another sport where you could, like baseball, you could strike for 2 years.
And big rosters.
Right. So you're not going to get guaranteed contract. Now, you might have this deal where the top five players get guaranteed contracts, but then all of a sudden you're running into that problem where, okay, if the five highest paid guys get guaranteed contracts, then don't you have a little split in your ranks there?
Sure you do.
But don't you anyway?
Well, the only, and I don't even know how many contracts are truly guaranteed. I don't think any of them are. But some of them are guaranteed just because the teams can't cut guys like Ndamukong Suh. I mean, the deal that he got with the Miami Dolphins, the Miami Dolphins can't cut him. They can't.
Right.
If they wanted to, they couldn't cut him.
But I'm okay with guys getting as much as they can. I'm okay
sure.
with that. But – you know, here's what's happened. The middle class has been eaten up. It's gone. The NFL middle class has been eaten up. You got the high paid guys, you got the lower paid guys. And if you're a middle class guy.
Yeah, but you know what, Pete, though? And I've heard that because, you know, that argument has been said for a long time. But if you look at the NFL now, there is a vast disparity between a minimum wage guy and a quarterback, you know, Carr or Tom Brady or whoever making $20+ million. But in reality, look at where the minimums are now and compare it to where it was.
When you played.
Yeah. I mean, my first contract, to give you an idea, I think my first salary my first year was $135. It was a first-round pick.
Your salary was $135?
Yeah. I think it was $135.
That's incredible.
$135, maybe $165.
Yeah. Right.
But that's all it was.
But, Jeff, here's what's happened. If you're a middle-class veteran and you're a backup, it's just like something we were talking about before the show. If a guy's making $35 an hour and he's been there for 15 years and they can replace him with somebody making $15 an hour in his first year, a lot of companies will do that. Well, teams do that now. Mm-hmm. So you're hurting that middle class from that standpoint. But the flip side is it's supposed to enable you to develop younger players, right? The problem is when you develop the younger players, then they become that middle class who's not starting, and they get cut, so you're never really turning that roster over.
Yeah, but see, I think when good players get to free agency, they all don't make top dollar, but they all make really good money.
Correct.
You know, so I'm not going to be one of those guys that, you know, look, I was a union guy for a long time, but I would never be one of those guys now that would sit here and bark and say that they've got to get these middle class established again. The market sets what the market is.
I'm with you.
You know, so if the players and the union want to fight to restore middle class, they're wasting time. If they want to bump up the minimums, then fine, go ahead. Do they want to count those salaries differently on the salary cap based on if a veteran gets X amount of dollars, it would be equal to what maybe a second-year player or a third-year player would get and get a credit kind of towards that to where it wouldn't count against the cap? Then fine, then do something like that. But you can't solve the middle-class issue in this situation.
No.
It is what it is.
Get better.
Be a better player. Time the market better.
With camp coming up in 2 weeks, one of the interesting changes this year is that the cut-down days are different. And I was talking to a couple coaches about it. And that last
What you're talking about is that they used to have a cut from, what was it, 90 to 75 to 53.
Right.
There's no longer a 75 cut.
No, it goes right from 90 to 53. So you know what's going to happen.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of guys playing that last game that have absolutely no chance of making the roster, and they're going to play because they don't want anybody else to get hurt.
And what are those guys going to do?
They're going to get hurt.
Of course they are.
Yeah, and then they're going to get settlements. And right. You know, but that's been happening forever.
But it's going to be even more prevalent this year.
It's just the pool of players that will get that has become larger.
Right.
You know, but it's not changing the fact that, okay, now we're going to start having injured players that want to get paid because they got hurt in the last preseason
game. No, but there's going to be a lot of guys in that last preseason game that know that.
It's happened.
You know, usually,
it's happened before. It's going to happen.
But usually, though, a guy who's the 77th player has already been cut. He knows he's not making the team, so he's going to pull a hand.
Yeah, but Pete, the 77th guy on the roster, if he has to get an injury settlement for 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 4 weeks or whatever it may be, it's peanuts.
But if there's enough guys do it, it's not going to be peanuts.
It's like insurance for the guys that make $10 million or $5 or $6 million.
What we just pointed out, the money they're making, so you're right, it's peanuts. But still, there's going to be a slot. You're going to see that last preseason game. You know what? If I was one of those guys, I'd do the exact same thing.
Got to be careful, though, with that. I mean, you better be legitimate, because if you're not legitimate, word travels fast. It's a one-league business, okay? And then if all of a sudden you're trying to scrape a little money out the door, okay, other teams are going to find out about that.
Yeah, probably, but a lot of those guys aren't going to come
back. Pete, come on.
Yeah, but if you're the 78th player on the roster, you're not coming back to somebody else's team and making a team anyway.
That's true, but I mean, but here's the thing, Pete. 21-year-olds and 22-year-olds, okay, they have a dream of being in the NFL. Do you think that they're thinking that from a business standpoint, okay, I'm never going to make a roster? No, they think they're going to make a roster. They think they're good enough. So I don't think you're going to have a lot
of that. Could you fake a hammy?
Could I?
Yeah.
No.
No?
No.
Yes, you could.
I couldn't.
You couldn't?
Because I never knew what a hamstring injury was. I never had a hamstring injury until I was 48, 47.
Like, I got a crick in my neck right now. I'll play the fourth game, and there's my neck. It's injury settlement. And you know what you do? You negotiate it. You know how that goes. I want this. You want that. I'll meet you in the middle. So you're going to get the middle money. But I think that's going to be an interesting dynamic this summer. And it's going to be interesting to see how they play out the preseason. Because traditionally it's been first game, 10 plays for the vets?
Mm-hmm.
You know, second game, maybe in quarter, and then maybe a little
well,
more?
Well, typically the first game is about a quarter.
Yeah.
Second game will be into the second quarter at some point.
Then out.
Third game.
Half.
Is a half. And maybe the start of the third quarter.
Right, to see until you can simulate.
And then the fourth preseason game has, for the most part, has now gone to nobody that is a starter has to play unless it's somebody that's in competition for a positional battle.
How do you think that will change with this? Do you think it will?
I think it will stay about the same, but I think instead of – because you – in that fourth preseason game, historically you have had very valuable backups playing because they had to play. And I think now you'll even see the valuable backups will not play in the fourth preseason game They might play, but a lot less. I mean, because you know what, Pete? A lot of those guys that were backups, second-teamers, they had to play the whole fourth preseason game.
Right. Like, I've actually heard stories where veterans were told, you know, a couple guys got hurt, and veterans were told, you might have to play in that fourth preseason game because I need the body.
Yeah.
And they didn't like it. They weren't very happy.
So I think, you know, look, let's talk offensive line. Okay, let's say you've got, you know, your five starters, and then for the most part, that fourth preseason game, you had your second team all playing the entire game. And now I think instead of having the entire second team playing that entire game, now you'll have maybe instead of your sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, tenth offensive lineman playing, I think you'll have maybe your eighth, ninth, and tenth, and then guys that are just camp fodder playing in that fourth preseason game. Because you know what? The sixth and seventh and eighth offensive linemen, as far as on your depth chart in importance, they're valuable players.
Of course, yeah.
Very valuable players.
It's interesting you brought up the offensive line because I want to get into that a little
bit. We can do that.
I think for me, when I look at this roster, there are a couple things that stand out, and that is one of them.
And I want to pick your brain about Brandon Albert. You've been around him a little bit.
Yeah.
And he's a Virginia guy, so, you know, I want to kind of find out about my Virginia guy.
You always got to find out that he's a Virginia guy.
I want to make sure that he's where he needs to be.
Did you see the ACC? They picked the ACC again this week.
They picked Virginia to win it?
Last. Last. Dead last in their division.
Pete, let me say this real quick. What's his name? Bronco Mendenhall?
Yeah.
The head coach at Virginia?
Yeah.
Last summer, me and the wife went up there and took a trip. Haven't been back to UVA in years. They have some of the poorest facilities when it comes to major college programs. They have great facilities, but they're used for all sports. And if they want to keep up, they got to fix that.
You know, it's interesting because, I can't say anything about a school's program because Arizona State hasn't won a diddly squat in a long time either. Mm-hmm. And I actually bumped into the athletic director, Ray Anderson, at the Combine. And Ray, you remember, Ray used to work in the league for a long time. He's the AD out there. And I always tell him, I go, Ray, please get rid of the coach. You know, and he goes,
That's always your solution.
Pay players is the other solution. I told him that too. And Merton Hanks was there.
The neck.
Yeah.
Merton Hanks.
And Merton's like, come on, Pete, they go to bowl games. I go, bowl games don't mean anything.
They don't anymore.
No. You want to play for a national champion? I said, just in my lifetime, I want to sit on the 50-yard line just once in the semifinal. Doesn't even have to be the finals. Just get me to the semifinals.
Well, didn't they used to be able to compete back in the day when they were illegal as all get out?
But way back in the day. I want them to get illegal again. You know what happened, though? All the boosters died. The old boosters. They were all old guys. They all died. They're not illegal anymore. Yeah, on the other side, I want to get into the offensive line.
All right, we'll do that.
I really do. I, to me, when I look at this football team, it's the one position, and you know how important it is, obviously, that there's so much uncertainty there. Mm-hmm. And Doug Marrone has added to the uncertainty over the last
year. Well, with the way they did OTAs now, there's a lot of question marks about who's going to play where and how competition will play out.
We'll get into that on the other side. Daly's Place is rocking once again next Thursday, July 20th, as Styx, REO Speedwagon, and the Eagles' Don Felder perform. Tickets for this and all shows, as always, are available at daliesplace.com. On the other side, we will talk some offensive line on Jaguars.com and Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday continues right now.
We are back. Pete Prisco, Jeff Loggeman, bottom of the hour. We'll be joined by the big fella.
Hello, Sally. So we got to push the O line conversation back.
Wait, you think he knows something about that?
Well, he claims to know something about it.
Well, he claims to know something.
I don't know if he actually does. You know what I want to know is, I can't believe that this hasn't become a much bigger story on NFL Network, ESPN Sports Center, and everywhere else. That the Indianapolis Colts have a quarterback that was widely viewed as a generational quarterback. And he has not thrown a pass since last season before he was hurt and taken out. What's going on? What operation did he have? What's his prognosis? The Indianapolis Colts mysteriously have now only two open training camp practices. How does that is that part of the Andrew Luck deal?
No, they were moving. And plus, they moved their camp. From
Anderson.
But
PPP.
No, they moved their camp.
Why did they move the camp?
Because that place, have you ever been to Anderson, Indiana?
No.
I have. That's why they moved the camp. It's terrible. It's
But you can find better places to hold a training camp besides holding them at your own facility.
Yeah, but, Jeff, a year ago they kind of moved part of the camp because I remember I went and watched the Bears and Colts work out there last year. So they kind of moved part of the camp there last year.
And the Colts are having
You're in a conspiracy theory guy.
I am in total conspiracy mode.
You think there's something more at play?
Yeah,
there.
I do.
You think they're hiding luck?
I think that he has a very serious injury and there's concern that he'll ever be back.
No, it's not to that point. When I talk to people up there, they promised me it wasn't to that point. Why would you think that?
Because they're closing training camp. No. They have practices with another team. They're not open to the public.
But they're having open practices at the stadium a couple nights too as well.
Pete,
Jeff, you're in a conspiracy theory.
In a radius around Indianapolis, how many universities are there?
Oh, and they've trained at a couple of them. They trained at one called Ross Holman University for years. It's a beautiful facility.
Why not be there?
Because they want, like every other team, they want to go back to their own facility. It's easier.
I'm not
defending the Colts in any way, shape, or form. Believe me, you're just.
What did he have done? Do you know?
No, specifically no. But it was
right shoulder, throwing
right,
shoulder.
Right. You think it was a rotator cuff?
What else could it be?
Can you come back from that?
I don't know. I've never played quarterback in the NFL and had to have a rotator cuff
surgery. I've heard he's thrown away from people he's throwing. And they expect him to be back.
I don't know.
You're in a conspiracy theory. You're hoping he's not back.
How does Gregson land on his feet with another job?
Gregson's a pretty good scout, though. He's just a bad GM. We've seen that before. I think that happened here once. Right? Wasn't Gene Smith a pretty good scout?
Yes.
He was a bad GM.
He was a very good scout.
And a bad GM.
Yeah.
So it happens. I think Gregson, I've known Gregson for a long time. You know what happened, Gregson? Gregson let arrogance get in the way of his success. I think if he had stayed true to who he was coming up, he would have been okay.
I think he was who he was.
I don't know, because I knew him a long time ago.
A lot of times, Pete, I mean, the true judge of a person is when he does get
power.
The helm, okay, then you find out really who they are.
Yeah, you're probably right. But he had battles with Chuck. I mean, battles. He'd call Chuck in, complain about things that he had no business, you know, control of who should play and who shouldn't play, that kind of thing. It was bad. It was a bad. I've heard stories where notes were going underneath the door to Chuck in the morning on Monday morning, what he should have done. Mm-hmm. It got bad. And Chuck won the power play. But Chuck's on shaky ground now, too. If he doesn't win, he's gone.
What about the new general manager, Chris Ballard? What do you know about him?
I don't know Chris, but I know people who I do respect greatly in this league, and I asked them about him, and they said he's top of the line.
Okay.
Very good.
Okay.
Very good. And these are guys, when I talked to them, they would tell me if he wasn't very good.
Okay, because you know what? I think one of the best young general managers is in the division in John Robinson.
Great general manager.
I mean, what he has been able to do in his time in Tennessee, I think, is unprecedented.
Now, I do know Jason Light very well down in Tampa, and John worked for Jason there. And Jason kind of came out of the Steve Keim tree, and I know those guys very well as well. And, you know, Jason worked for Belichick back in the day, and they all speak highly of John Robinson. He's done a great job there. I mean,
I've talked with him a little bit, and I thoroughly enjoy talking with him.
Impressive.
Very impressive.
Football guy. He's ahead.
But what is more impressive is to watch some of the moves that he's been able to do.
They're the trendy, chic pick this year.
I'm not picking them just because of that. I just like some of the moves. I think they're still, you know, a few years away with the development of the roster and also the development of their quarterback. But I think their quarterback is obviously much farther along than maybe any other quarterback, with the exception of Andrew Luck in the division.
Oh, he is.
Yeah. So, and can he take a next big step? I don't know, but he's coming off of a pretty serious injury.
He got a leg injury. He was suffered here.
He should be fine.
He should be fine. It's a broken leg or whatever it was, an ankle, a lower ankle. He should be fine.
Yeah, surgery, fix it, and then, you know, it's just a matter of letting the bone heal.
I'm going to go there in camp, and I haven't been in a couple of years, but usually I pick a, you know, 10, 12 teams, but I'm going to go there this year because I want to do a story, and you know this is something that I do not believe. I don't believe that you run the football to win. You know that. But I think he might be onto something there. And the reason I say that, and they might be onto something here, with defenses getting so small and fast, the teams that kind of flip over, if particularly if you don't have a franchise Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers quarterback, the ones that flip over and start playing that way might have a leg up for a couple years on the ones that don't.
They should. But here's the other thing. What else are you going to do if you don't have that franchise guy?
But they have Mariota.
He can't keep throwing it.
No, but they have Mariota.
Yeah, but he's not ready for that yet.
He had a pretty good year last year. You're right. He's not ready
for it. He's not ready for to you know put a team on his back yet. But, I mean, look, I think he's got some impressive skills. He's got a very good arm. He's athletic. I think he's going to be – I don't want to say he could develop into an elite quarterback, but I think he's got a chance.
He does have a chance.
Yeah.
This team is going to try and do that this year. I mean, what ideally, how many carries a game does Fournette get?
18.
18 touch, 18 carries?
And no, carries. 17, 18 carries.
And then four or five passes?
Couple catches.
Couple catches?
Yeah,
so
maybe.
So 20-something, and then what, Ivory or whoever, the Yeldon?
Well, I mean, if he's getting 20 touches in a game, I mean, that's what, do the math. I mean, that's a lot of touches in a season now. You know, so I think Fournette.
Yeah, nobody carries 350, 60 times.
No. So you're looking at, what, 320 with 20 touches a game. I mean, that's plenty, and then, you know, provided he's healthy, you know, so.
But the whole idea, here's my problem with the whole idea with Fournette. You know, I told you I don't like running backs being taken that high. I never will.
Okay.
No matter how good they are.
Well, but besides that, did you like him as a running back?
Yes. Yes.
Was he the best running back in the draft?
Yes.
Okay.
Although, you know, Dalvin Cook is in that conversation too. But
yeah, but there's too many question marks.
Correct, but we're talking just strictly on ability.
Hmm. Yeah, he's close, but he's not there.
No, I think Fournette has a chance to be a special. He has a chance to be a special.
I think he can be a generational back. That's what I said, and I'm going to stick with it.
You're talking Emmitt.
Adrian Peterson type, you know.
So by the time he walks out of this building, he's going to be better than Fred Taylor?
Maybe.
No chance.
Here's the one thing that it would be hard to measure him with a guy like Fred or a guy that had a ton of carries like a Tony Dorsett or somebody like that because he's a physical runner. You know, and I'm not saying that he's going to be Earl Campbell, but he may be one of those guys for 6 or 7 years. He was unbelievable. But doesn't have the longevity just because of the way he plays the game.
Is he Marshawn Lynch-like?
Yes.
Yeah.
And you know what? If you get 6 or 7 years of high-end performance, fine. You know, when I say generational, I'm not talking, okay, he's going to be Emmitt Smith and Barry Sanders and going to play for 10 years,
right.
And he's going to end up on the top 10 all-time rushing list. I'm just saying while he plays, he is going to be one of the top three backs in the league, period.
It's high praise there. You love him, though.
I love
him.
I'll
give you that. I don't see that from him. I don't. I think he's going to be a very good player. I just don't. And I'm a value guy. I just don't think that position is of great value.
All right, let me ask you this. If you don't take him, who would you have taken?
That was the problem. We talked about one of the guys I liked. I like Barnett. I don't know. That people say, well, it's too high for him. Well, if you like a pass rusher, and he's going to be a good pass rusher.
Yeah, the Tennessee sack record.
That's not too high for him.
That was not too high for him.
No. So I probably would have taken Barnett in that situation.
Okay.
That's just me. Just like a couple years ago, instead of taking Luke Jokel, I would have taken Ziggy Ansah.
Yeah, we actually had that conversation on the show.
I would. That was my guy.
You know, when we were trying to pick it, who would you take? And I just said, you know, Ziggy Ansah is kind of the freak. And it would be hard not to take him.
But they didn't know how old he was, and they still don't know how old he is.
Who cares?
He might be 33 tomorrow.
Who cares?
You know, you do realize that was an issue with a lot of people
know.
In the scouting circles.
Well,
you know,
they have that problem in Little League, too, don't they?
One last thing about we talk about the draft a little bit. We're going to get into the offensive line on the other side, but Taco Charlton.
He's not very good.
You know what his nickname is in the scouting circles?
He's terrible.
Right?
Slow.
Soft Taco.
Soft Taco? Who picked him again?
Dallas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I watched him on film. And
I didn't
like him. Pete, I remember looking at the rankings that they had on different scouting services and from watching the film, I went, I don't see it. I don't see how anybody could put this guy up into that category of players.
See, he calls himself Taco Supreme, but the scouting.
He's got a deal. Doesn't he have a deal with Taco Bell now?
Yeah, no, one of those taco places.
Or some taco place in Dallas?
Taco Supreme, he calls himself. They call him Soft Taco.
Good for him, but I wouldn't have drafted him.
All right, on the other side, we're going to get Tony Boselli, and we're going to talk some offensive line, Jaguars offensive line, because, again, that's one of the, to me, for the next month and a half, Jeff, that's the focal point of this football
game. In a second. You can't put it ahead of the quarterback.
No,
Pete.
That goes without saying.
But I know, but, okay, but Pete, you have to say that, right, as you've done for years, so don't miss the opportunity.
Bortles, first and foremost, then the offensive line.
I'm making sure
you're
staying
focused. It's always a quarterback. All right, check out Jack Hanania's Audi Jacksonville on Blanding Boulevard. You can lease a beautiful A3 from just $229 a month. Head over today for details. Coming up on the other side, Tony Baselli from London on Jaguars.com and Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday continues right now.
Welcome back, Jaguars Thursday. I'm Pete Prisco with Jeff Loggeman in studio, and he's trying to figure out if he can get his headphones to work.
I got it.
You've only been here for 20 years doing this. You can't figure out your headphones yet?
That one's not working properly. We got it.
You're okay now?
Yeah, I'm good.
Because you had panic on your face. No. It looked like it was the fourth quarter late in the game, and the team was driving it down your throat like
the
old days.
See, that was cool, calm, and collective recovery right there, okay? When that one's not working, you got to go to plan B.
Yeah, you're right. Somebody else would have panicked a lot more than you just did. I'll give you that.
I handled that, Pete.
Yeah, you did. You handled it well.
I got it.
I know a guy that would have panicked.
Totally.
Oh, he would have gone nuts.
No, he doesn't care about what anybody says. No. He would have just went.
He would have ripped
flow.
One off. Yeah,
I don't need to listen to him anyway.
He would have ripped my headsets off. I'm using yours. You don't need them. Right, Tony?
I wouldn't have panicked. I just made sure I was taken care of.
Of course. That's always about you. I like that. Look, you've borrowed that from me for years. What's good for me is good for me. I like it. I taught you well.
So, whatever. How are you guys doing?
We're doing good.
We're doing great.
Pete wants to talk offensive line in this segment. What is Pete going to offer, Tony, that you haven't already given us?
Nothing.
I want to hear what you say. I want to know.
I know more about offensive line than Pete's ever even thought about.
Well, God, I would hope so. You did play the position a little bit. If you had played it a little more, you would already be in Canton.
No, thank you very much for
Zing! I had to get one in, didn't I?
All right, so along those lines.
You'd be happy. I just had a very good Italian meal.
You did? Is that on the DPSSO diet?
In London?
Well, yeah, London, outstanding Italian restaurant, Jeff, in London. We'll have to go back to it.
All right.
Outstanding.
Before we get to the offensive line play, give me what you chowed down in that big old body.
Well, it was my second dinner.
Second dinner.
Wow.
So I had an early dinner. So I had a little bolognese with some bruschetta. What else did we have? We had a little margarita pizza. It was good.
345 by December again, like 2 years ago. It's gone.
No, I'm right. I'm doing good, Pete.
I've seen you. You look great. You look good, man. You look good.
But if you're out of the country and you got to go to a good restaurant, you're not going to partake a little bit.
By the way, does this sound familiar, Tony? The results for Tony Baselli are accurate, but he is remunerated.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Listen, you might want to try it.
I might want to try it, especially if they remunerate me.
Fair enough.
Okay, let's talk offensive line. Okay, it's so unsettled right now as you go in the camp, or at least Marone has given that impression. Do you believe that, Tony, and how do you think it'll finally play out?
Well, I've told Jeff since they drafted Cam Robinson, to me it shouldn't be unsettled. I mean, it's your starting five: Brandon Albert, Cam Robinson, Brandon Linder, AJ Can, and Jeremy Parnell. That's how I'd start camp, and that's who I'd give all the reps to. And if Amame can beat out Cam Robinson in the course of it, fine, so be it. But that's my starting five. I think they're five most talented guys, and I will go with it. One of the things I get worried about, and we saw it last year, and I give Jeff credit because he brought it up around the Jokel and Beecham kind of competition that really never was a competition, is you have so few reps, guys, in today's NFL. I mean, think about it. They have over half the reps we did, or less than half the reps we did, going into the season, because they have no 2-a-days, shorter, later camp report date. I mean, so they have less reps. So you don't have time as a coach to go in there and have these big battles and say, let's move guys around and try different combinations and the such. I mean, you have to do that going into camp, and that's what the offseason's for. And I think you go in there with those five guys. That's what I would do.
And see, the biggest thing that we assume a lot of things, but how can you assume after watching what they did in OTAs that Leonard's going to be center? that A.J. Cann is going to be right guard, that Cam Robinson is going to be put in at left guard from the get-go. I mean, you don't know. I mean, the way they operate at OTAs.
That's what I would do. I agree with you. We don't know based on what we saw or didn't see because we were not out there very much under the new rules, which is fine. But if you ask me what I would do, that's what I would do.
Yeah.
That's what I'd roll out there.
But that's what you would do, and Jeff said that's what he would do, and that's what I probably would do.
No, I didn't
do.
Say I'd do that.
No?
No, I didn't say I would do that.
What would you do?
I would have Brandon Leonard at center.
So would I.
I think that's center's more
that's
valuable.
That's
what Tony said.
Yeah, I know. But I would have A.J. Cann at left guard.
Me too. I put Cam Robinson at right guard.
I would let Cam Robinson compete at left tackle and let him be
Why would you do that, Jeff? Because you know Brandon, at this point of his career, is going to be better right now. And you're paying $1 million. He's your left tackle. Move Cam Robinson inside.
To right guard.
For at least 1 year.
To right guard. I would look.
Well, I don't care. I mean, I would.
Okay, whoa. Wait a minute here. Who's the one player in league history that came in as a left tackle that played guard for a little while?
Jonathan Ogden.
Up? Okay.
Well, Laramie Tunsil did it last year.
All right.
Laramie Tunsil did it last year. Did a good job with it as well.
Right.
Is Cam Robinson? Is he in that category?
He's not Jonathan Ogden,
no.
But I think he could be.
He could be Laramie.
Okay, that's why I'm asking.
I mean, you talk to the Alabama people; they praised the kid. I mean, he got in some trouble.
I watched his tape a lot, Pete and Jeff, and I said before they ever drafted him, he could start at guard today in the NFL. I thought he'd be better guard right away than tackle because I think he still needs to work on some pass sets and stuff like that.
Left guard or right guard, what's better for him?
Well, I think he could be. I think he can. He's going to be a
left
tackle.
From a strength standpoint,
he's
a left
guard because he's going to be a left tackle.
And play AJ at right guard or whoever wins that job over there.
No, AJ's played right guard for the last 2 years.
Yeah, but he's been a left. He was a left guard.
Played at a very high level.
No, he was. And I've talked to AJ about some of the things because AJ tried to become a better run blocker last year, and he was the worst. He got worse at it. I mean, the guy wasn't very good last year, and he knows it. And I think he's going to come back and play better football.
Okay, he's got to take a big step.
Are you guys concerned at all if they do move Linder?
To guard?
Yeah.
No, Brandon Linder's going to be a great
but then what do you do at
player
center?
Wherever.
What do you do at center?
I mean, right now,
Shatley.
And here's the other thing. I mean, the guy started a couple seasons ago, and we kind of all forgotten about him. Okay, he's my UVA guy who started an entire season as a rookie. And he did have hip surgery, but why not him in there?
Tony?
I love Blanco. You know that, Jeff. I've been a big Blanco fan.
He's athletic?
But he's not physical enough, right?
I don't get the feeling that he's in the staff's plans.
He's not physical enough, right, Tony?
I think he is. He's a tough guy. I think he was hurt. He
gets to a second level very well.
He got to the second level.
And he was undersized and needed to get stronger. But he found a way to start a bunch of games. And then they bring in Wisniewski, who I thought Linder was better than. I mean, I thought
we both agreed on that one.
And he ends up being a backup, which I thought he was better. And then he gets hurt with the hip, so he misses all of last year because of hip injury. So we don't. And if you look at him now, and I've talked to him, he looks bigger. He looks more powerful. He looks strong. I mean, he looks good. I'm with Jeff. I mean, I think he can. I'd let him compete for center or guard.
So
wherever you move Linder, wherever you put Linder, I let him compete for one of the other spots.
So the question becomes is, okay, Linder made himself a darn good center last year.
Mm-hmm.
He was a really good right guard too, right?
Yes.
So are you better off with a guy being good at center than at guard? Because a couple years ago, 5, 6, 7 years ago, it didn't really – you wanted to be better at center than guard, but it's changed a little bit.
I've told Tony this philosophy, and he doesn't necessarily agree, but I think your best player should be at center. I mean, if you have a choice, okay, if you got one player and he can be really good, whether it be left guard, right guard, center, you put him at center. It's a more important position.
I tend to agree with you, Jeff. What do you don't agree with that, Tony?
No, I didn't say I didn't agree with that. I just said put them at their best position where they're best at, and I'm not convinced that Linder's a better center than he was guard. He was a good center last year. I thought he was better at guard the year before in his rookie year as well. I think he's a good center. I'm not saying that. My whole point to Jeff was, if you move him to guard, it's not a downgrade. I mean,
no.
I don't think he was a much better, like a great center and an average guard. I thought he was good at both. I thought maybe a little better at guard. So if I'm a coach, I'm looking at the rest of my line and looking where my talent level is. And I said, before Brandon Albert, we knew he was coming back, I would have put Linder at guard because I thought that was your best five was with him at guard.
Okay.
Now with Brandon Allen back, I think your best five is with Linder at center because you put Cam Robinson at guard.
All right, so,
I wasn't saying that one position is more important than the other. I was just saying you have to look at the five guys you have that you want to line up with.
Opening day, opening week in the NFL season, starting offensive line, not the one that you want, what do you think it will be?
I'm going to go with the one I want, Pete, because no one knows. I mean, first of all, he's been out there.
Make a decision. Pick one.
I'm picking one. Allen, Robinson, Linder, Cann, Parnell.
Jeff?
Let me watch training camp for a week.
Let me just see
where they start at least.
Yeah, you want an advantage.
Because you know what? I mean, if I said something different than Tony, you know what? Would it be grossly wrong? No.
We're all guessing, Jeff. We don't know.
Right.
But Tony brought up a good point. I mean, the lack of reps that you get in a training camp nowadays doesn't afford you the luxury of playing with the lineup. I mean, you've got to hit the ground with the lineup you want to run with.
I agree.
And with what they did in OTAs, and they're talking about, well, we want everybody to have different positions, cross-train them, et cetera. Look, I mean,
you can't do that.
It's kind of hard to do. And you know what? In the OTAs, they had A.J. Cann at left guard, Brandon Leonard at right guard, and Shatley at center. You know, so all of a sudden when you go to camp, are you going to say, you know what, guys? Now we're going to play everybody where we need to play, Matt. We're going to put Brandon Leonard at center. We're going to put Cam Robinson at left guard, and we're going to play somebody at right guard. Maybe A.J. Cann, let him compete. I don't know.
Shatley, to me, is like the backup singer in a band that got to the front and couldn't hit the notes. That's what he's a backup.
Who?
Shatley. You guys love Shatley. I think Shatley's a backup.
I love him because we love him for what they paid for him.
Right.
Which was nothing.
Right, but
he was an undrafted guy.
Should he be
guy.
Starting? No.
I think you could make the argument that, you know what, if Leonard's a guard, you could make the argument, let Bowenko play center.
I would agree with that. If Linder plays guard, you play Bowenko.
But I don't know.
Here's how I would start it. I would be Albert at left tackle, Cann at left guard, Linder at center, Robinson at right guard, and Parnell at right tackle. That's how I would start.
Well, basically the same five guys I got. You just swapped the guards.
Right. That's right. So doesn't mean you're wrong or I'm right. We're guessing.
Well, Pete, your world, it means that we're wrong and you're right.
Right. You're wrong once again, Baselli, as you are every single Monday when we do the show. I feel sorry for you. I can't wait for the season to start. Go eat your third dinner.
Yeah.
Go eat your third dinner.
Yeah.
All right, Tony. Thanks. Have fun. Get him out of here.
What?
Get him out of here.
He's kicking you out?
Get him out. He's not out.
I'm coming back to the next segment, you idiot.
No, we don't want him back for the next segment. Get him the hell out of here. Go eat your third dinner. No, we'll bring him back. I didn't know you were staying on.
First of all, hey, you're a guest.
No, I'm not.
Get that straight.
No, we pipped JP. He's done. You didn't know that? I'm here every Thursday now. Poor JP.
Don't do that to JP. That'll hurt his feelings. Don't do that to poor JP.
All right. Daly's Place is rocking once again. Next Thursday, July 20th, the Styx, REO Speedwagon, and the Eagles' Don Felder perform. Tickets for this and all shows are always available at dailysplace.com. More coming up with Tony and Jeff on the other side on Jaguars.com and Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday continues right now.
Welcome back to Jaguars Thursday. Pete Prisco, Jeff Lagerman, and Tony Baselli over in London eating four dinners a night and living it up like he always does.
By the way, Tony, what are you doing over there?
So I'm over here for the Jaguar Academy. So every year we do an academy where we come over and have a number of coaches and ex-Jaguar players come and teach ages 18 to 24 the game, and it's pretty much a fundamentals camp. And it's a good time.
So my question: anybody that you've seen that you went, wow, that young man's got some talent?
No.
So last year, two of the offensive linemen I had, one is playing in JC this year in the United States, and one is playing Division One football. Or at least he's on the team. I mean, I don't know if he'll play, but I think he got a scholarship. There are kids over here, especially some of the big guys, linebackers, that if they had the opportunity, I would say if they could start as, you know, eighth or ninth graders playing football, they're good enough to play Division One. I'm not saying they're going to make the NFL, but they'd be good enough to play Division One football.
Well, Menelik Watson's from London, isn't he?
Don't know that.
Menelik Watson, the offensive lineman.
Yes, he is. Yeah,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so there are guys there.
So there's some athletic dudes over here. They just don't learn. They learn the game so late that by the time they kind of understand it, they're too old to play in college, and they're not quite good enough to play in the NFL. But if they figure out the developmental side of it and create more opportunities for younger players, I think one day you'll see a number of kids from the UK, Germany, you know, this part of Europe playing in the NFL.
Tony,
playing college football.
Tony, before we get out of here, one of the things I wanted to get into was Fred Taylor. I don't know if you saw his comments or were you here when he had made the comments the other day about the Hall of Fame. Fred was harsh. I mean, you don't, and you've taken an entirely different approach to it, kind of low-keyed it and everything, but Fred just flat out said that the voters are missing by the fact that he's not nominated. And you know what? He's never been nominated. And did you know, I did not know this, and I'm around the league a long time. I didn't know that somebody has to send in a nomination form before they put him on the ballot.
I didn't know that either.
So he's not even on the ballot?
He's never been on the ballot. Nobody's ever nominated him. They had, 150 guys or whatever on the ballot last year, and he was not on the ballot.
Well, why haven't you put him on the ballot?
Well, I didn't know they had to. I'm going to now.
Okay, so it's your fault.
Will he be on this year then, Pete?
Yeah, he'll be on this year.
It's your fault.
Look at Tony sitting there going, I hope he's not on this year because he's going to take my Jaguar love away from me.
It's your fault.
No. No, so Tony.
No, I don't think that way at all.
And I'm going to say this, and I bang the drum for you, and I'll continue to bang the drum for you, but I also think Fred Taylor is a Hall of Famer. And people argue with me, and I always pull out these stats, you know, and I use Curtis Martin as the biggest example. Curtis Martin averaged 4.5 per rush in his career twice. Fred Taylor did it 8 times. 8. If Fred Taylor, he carried 1,000 more times than Fred Taylor. Let's just take Fred Taylor's 4.5 career rush average and down to 4.2. If he carries the same number of times that Curtis Martin carried, he'd have 15,000 rushing yards. Mm. Now, it's not the Hall of Longevity, and I apply that to Tony all the time. I'm applying it here to Fred, too. Curtis Martin's in there because he was a great, darn good back for a long time. But was Curtis Martin a great player?
I think he was.
I think he was a very good player.
I think he was a great player.
I think Fred Taylor was a great player.
I never want to take away from anybody who's in the Hall of Fame. But I'll just name two guys. They're in the Hall of Fame, and I'm happy for them. But Jerome Bettis and Curtis Martin, which were contemporaries of Fred Taylor.
And Fred
Taylor? You're asking me who I'd rather line up behind me?
How about the one going in this year?
Curtis Martin or Jerome Bettis. But I'll take Fred Taylor every day and twice on Sunday.
Yeah, me too. What about the guy going in this year in Denver, from Denver?
Well, again, he was great for the short period of time, got hurt. I mean, was he great?
Well, in fairness to Terrell Davis, Terrell Davis did things no one's ever done in the playoffs.
Right. And he was for 3-4 years.
He had a 2,000-yard year, rushing year. I mean, Terrell Davis was special.
But again, Tony, it's a longevity thing.
A great player.
Who was a great player?
Fred.
Fred was a great player. He's special. Special. If Tom didn't take him out on the goal line, he would have had a lot more touchdowns than everybody would say he was in the Hall of Fame. He ought to take his touchdowns away from Stacey Mack and James Stewart, and then he would be in the Hall of Fame probably. He'd have over 100 touchdowns.
Yep. Or Natron.
You're right.
Why did they ever take?
Not what they
no, he wasn't there. Why did they ever take Fred out on the goal line? Anybody have any idea about
that? No, I never understood that because you remember the year that James got hurt. Fred's rookie year, he had 18 touchdowns, and he played every down and goal line and everything. And then for whatever reason, after that, they always took Fred out on goal line and put someone else in, and it hurt him. I agree with you. I thought he should have been a goal line back. I think Fred was. I don't think Fred was ever appreciated here. To the level of player he was, and I don't think he's going to appreciate in the NFL.
I don't either. And remember, I can still remember him lining up wide and going past Rod Woodson for on a pass play. Was it 70 yards?
He could fly.
It was 75 yards in Baltimore. It was five. It was empty set. He wasn't even. Mark wasn't even supposed to look at him. The Fred was so wide open, he threw it deep and scored a touchdown.
He's an incredible player. And you will get in eventually, hopefully this year.
Travel
and
safe.
I think he will too. Travel safe, Tony.
Are we done already, boys?
That's it.
Yeah, we're
done.
You're out. Get
that
out.
That was quick.
We'll get
good
out.
Good job, Pete.
Yeah.
Screwed up.
Tell JP he's never.
I'll see you next week when I'm back in town.
All right. See ya. Tony Boselli, Jeff Loggeman. I'm Pete Prisco. Boy, it was fun, and I feel bad for you, JP, because you're never getting your seat back. Never, ever getting your seat back. You're gone, JP. Take a long time vacation. Prisco's in the seat now.
See you guys.